technically correct.
I'm a stylish American. I've been forcing myself to be into soccer since 2004.
With Tyler Bischoff.
Ooh, intelligence. There we go. Oh my God, what am I?
On ESPN Las Vegas.
I roll with a crew of problematic bachelors, and we call ourselves the Squad.
Fireball.
Hello, national champions. 30 years ago today, UNLV won a national title. Ken Bulkey from sinbin.vegas is going to join the show. We're going to have a blogger on to talk about a sport that doesn't exist at the moment. And UNLV football, still recruiting and recruiting well for the 2021 class. But we're going to start with the Raiders in the NFL because is there a bigger false narrative in the NFL than John Gruden loves quarterbacks?
They normally get punishment wrong. So, no.
Is that a false narrative, though?
Is John Gruden loves quarterback a false narrative?
Yeah, we're going to get into that today. Because literally everyone does it. We're guilty of it, too. We link John Gruden and the Raiders with whatever quarterback he can possibly get his hands on. Right? Whether it's through the draft, whether it's through free agency, we link him with everyone.
I think there's a phrasing difference, because I do think that man does love quarterbacks.
And does he love them more than any other position? Just pay attention to quarterbacks more? Because I'd venture to guess he loves Alec Ingold blocking a linebacker at the second level just as much as he loves his quarterbacks.
Okay. I remember him talking to, like, third string, like, quarterbacks from Northwestern Illinois State and him being like, you could really play at the next level. Right. Look at this throw right here.
Right. But he also did Gruden grinders, and his Gruden grinders would be the damn fullback. Because he made one block in the second quarter. So, like, he loves football. Yes, he loves quarterbacks, but I don't think he loves them more than really any other position. It's just the most important one. It's the one we talk about the most. But we're guilty of it, too. I mean, it started the week with the tiny tidbits of news that the Raiders did a video call with Justin Herbert, right? And we latched onto that. Oh, we were all over that. Justin Herbert, they're going to trade up for him, right? And, like, every time he talks about a quarterback that's in the league, it's they go dig up his comments about him from his quarterback camp or whenever he was working on ESPN. But John Gruden, in his time as a head coach, has only drafted 4 quarterbacks in his career. Jerry McDonald of the Mercury News has a good story on Gruden's history, or I guess lack thereof, when it comes to drafting quarterbacks. Now, he's not always 100% calling the shots when it comes to who they draft, but John Gruden's teams rarely draft quarterbacks. And they've never taken a quarterback in round one. They've taken a quarterback in the second round, Marquez Tuiasosopo. Chris Sims in the third round. Bruce Gradkowski was a 6th rounder, and Josh Johnson was a 5th rounder. That's it. That is John Gruden's history of drafting quarterbacks. Based on just that alone, like, we should have no expectation that he trades up for Justin Herbert, that he hopes that Jordan Love falls to him at 12. Honestly, we shouldn't even really expect him to take Jalen Hurts if he's there in round 3, because Gruden doesn't really do that. Like, it's more likely he takes a guy in round 3, but he doesn't even do that very often. Taking a quarterback in the draft is not what he does. Jerry McDonald, when he wrote a story for the Mercury News, the big one he highlighted was, John Gruden passed on Aaron Rodgers to make sure he could draft Cadillac Williams.
Okay, but to me, that also seems like a huge John Gruden move in the idea of, got to get a running back.
Yes, and to be fair to John Gruden, like, the entire NFL basically passed on Aaron Rodgers. He was definitely not the only one that passed on Aaron Rodgers and made a bad draft.
I feel like it's like 23 teams.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So he wasn't the only one that passed on Aaron Rodgers, but he could have taken Aaron Rodgers. They interviewed Aaron Rodgers, liked Aaron Rodgers apparently, and still didn't take Aaron Rodgers when they were drafting 4th or 5th or whatever it was in Tampa Bay that year. But
Cadillac Williams.
But if you look back at John Gruden's history as a head coach and his quarterback play, he might need to start drafting quarterbacks. Like, you can make the argument that Derek Carr is the second best quarterback Gruden has ever coached in the NFL. Here's the list of his starting quarterbacks. With the Raiders, Donald Hollis, Rich Gannon, and now Derek Carr. With the Buccaneers, Brad Johnson, Brian Greasy, Chris Sims, Bruce Gradkowski, and Jeff Garcia. That's 8 different quarterbacks in 13 seasons. The only quarterback to ever last for 3 years as the starter with Gruden is Rich Gannon. He never had the same quarterback for four straight seasons. If Carr manages to start this year, he will only be the second quarterback John Gruden has used for three seasons since he's been a head coach. And there's a reason for that. Outside of the years with Rich Gannon, John Gruden has not had good quarterback play, right? That year with Rich Gannon, the Raiders were, or the 3 years with Rich Gannon, the Raiders were fourth, third, and eighth in the NFL in points scored, right? Great offense with Rich Gannon. But in Gruden's 7 years with Tampa Bay, the highest the Buccaneers ever ranked in the league in points scored was 18th. Only once were they top 10 in yards, and they were 10th that year. That was seven seasons in the NFL of having a below-average offense in Tampa Bay with John Gruden. And now with Derek Carr, 2 years, the Raiders have yet to crack the top 20 in points scored. Now, points scored is not the only way to measure an offense, and it's definitely not the best way to measure a quarterback. It's not solely on the quarterback. And if you go to quarterback rating, again, Rich Gannon is great. His 3 years, excellent as a quarterback. But since Gruden was traded to Tampa Bay, right, since he's no longer had Rich Gannon, he's been a head coach for 9 seasons. His team's average rank in quarterback rating is 14th. So he's slightly above average when it comes to the quarterback play he's gotten since Rich Gannon. Rich Gannon was awesome. Ever since then, average quarterback play under John Gruden, and overall bad offensive production as far as points and yards go. So Gruden might need to look and actually draft a quarterback. He might need to go find a superstar quarterback, because what he's been doing his entire career is pretty much taking either the quarterback he inherited, right? That's what Derek Carr is right now, or leftovers from another team, like what Marcus Mariota is, right? That's what he's been doing pretty much this entire time. Rich Gannon was a leftover player, right? He was with the Vikings and the Chiefs before that. Rich Gannon was Ryan Tannehill before Ryan Tannehill. Like, Rich Gannon was like an average NFL quarterback for a while with two different teams. Then he gets to John Gruden and the Raiders, and he's awesome for a couple of years, right? So Rich Gannon was essentially what Ryan Tannehill was last season. You don't see that very often. It's very rare for that to happen, and it feels like John Gruden is still chasing that, right? Like, that's what the Marcus Mariota signing looks like. He's trying to find his next Rich Gannon. That's what that feels like, and that's incredibly rare to do. Once you see a player for 6 years, you kind of know who he is, right? Like, you kind of have a good idea. And sure, Marcus Mariota is going to be a new situation. It's a new coach. Like, there's reasons for optimism that he could be better than he's shown, but in reality, usually, players kind of are who they are 6 years into the league. There's not much changing. So, at some point, Gruden's going to have to draft a quarterback. Like, the idea of, we're going to take other teams' leftovers, we're going to just inherit some quarterback that was on a bad team because that's why you got the job, like, that doesn't work. Like, at some point, you're going to have to go find an actual star quarterback. I don't think this year it makes the most sense for them to draft a quarterback, because I think they have too many holes that quarterback isn't, like, Carr's fine. Like, they have other holes that need to be filled. But at some point, I do think John Gruden's going to have to draft a quarterback in the first round. At some point, they're going to have to take a shot at getting a real franchise quarterback. That way you can have an actual top 10 offense, an actual top 10 quarterback play that can put points on the board, and not just, oh, Derek Carr's got good stats, but you averaged 18 points a game.
Man, I prefer the other methodology of accumulate as many quarterbacks as you possibly
can. But
they're
all bad.
But what if one of them's not?
There's not enough of them that you can accumulate that might not be bad.
I'm trying to remember, there was a year that over the course of 16 games, the Raiders started like six different quarterbacks. Like, just because, like, okay, we're going with Rich Gannon. Oh, he's hurt. Okay, what about this guy? Oh, he's hurt? All right. That guy. And I'm trying. That's all I want from a season, is we start with Derek Carr, and then we go to Marcus Mariota, and the drop-off isn't negligible enough. And then, it's Glennon. Oh, they brought it back in Glennon. Huh, the drop-off wasn't negligible enough.
Has anybody ever had any remote success playing more than two quarterbacks in a year?
Probably not, but...
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Like, obviously, the Titans just played two quarterbacks in a year and had success. But even that, like... You're not mimicking that. Like, that's hard to do. Like, that's rare to do. And it seems like John Gruden is chasing his entire career. Is he the most success he's had? Well, I guess he won a Super Bowl without Rich Gannon. So I can't even say that. That is technically incorrect. The best, like, 3-year stretch he had was with Rich Gannon and the Raiders, right? So it feels like he's trying to do that again, where he's like, well, I can turn Rich Gannon into something great, so surely I can turn Derek Carr or Marcus Mariota or Josh Johnson, Chris Sims, Bruce Gradkowski into something great. And in reality, you can't. Like, in reality,
you've got... But he's done it before.
He's done it once. He's like one of eight something like that.
Okay, but who else has done it? Nobody.
What do you mean? The Titans just did it. Mike Vrabel just did it.
Took a guy. Okay, I would say there's some levels to like what Rich Gannon was in 1999 when John Gruden got him versus like Ryan Tannehill or Marcus Mariota.
You're suggesting Gannon was good before he got to Gruden?
No, I was saying that Gannon was like a career journeyman, yeah. And then all of a sudden he can turn him around. Go get, like, you know, who's backing up? What's RG3 doing?
That's what they did with Marcus Mariota, though. That's
no,
their
he's a former starter, first or second overall pick. Like, no. I want somebody that's just like, you know, Charlie Whitehurst.
Why are you obsessed with bad? You love bad quarterbacks more than John Gruden loves bad quarterbacks.
I love chaos.
Like, these are all terrible ideas.
I just want someone to have a really bad... I want to see jerseys with really bad quarterbacks' names on the back of them because they had one good year.
You got a whole offseason of Peterman.
I know. I'm waiting.
He's still around?
What if he's really good in the preseason?
God, I hope so. Well, I hope we have a preseason. But, man, yes, I want him to be unbelievable. Like, I want it to be... Wait, Nathan Peterman's got a shot at this job? I mean, Gruden's going to take three quarterbacks. Like, he's probably what's going to happen here, especially because they expanded the game day roster. So he's going to take three quarterbacks. So how many? Might take four next year.
None of them drafted.
Yeah, no, none of them any good. He just found them somewhere else. Like, you've played before. Come here, DeShone Kizer.
He's got to be really mad that the Jets locked up David Fales.
He's got to be pissed about that one, David Fales. Locked up. David Fales. See, he's got to shoot higher than that, though. He usually shoots a little bit higher than that. Like Marcus Mariota.
And Nathan Peterman.
And DeShone Kizer.
Mike Glennon.
Yeah. These are starting quarterbacks for at least like four games in their careers. I mean, Kizer had a whole season of not winning, so.
I want him to bring back Brady Croyle.
And do what with him?
Get his record above 0-10.
No. You got to live with that 0-10. If that's your record, that's what you got to live with for the rest of time. Derek Carr was almost 0-10. Still here. Now he's, what, 39-55? It's a great record. Tentatively correct. Coming up next, UNLV football. Still recruiting and recruiting well.
Check out the podcast on lvsportsnetwork.com. Bischoff's Briefs.
I went on the internet this week.
Oh, God.
And I found this.
Bischoff's Briefs.
There's a lot of porn piling up on the internet. It doesn't download itself.
Bischoff's Briefs.
I think I get it. I think I get it.
Cam Blanton committed to UNLV.
First commit of the 2021 class for UNLV football, and it means UNLV has the best class in the Mountain West in 2021. Because they have the only commit. But Cam Blanton is ranked pretty highly. He is a three-star, but would come in as the 20th best recruit in UNLV history. He is top 600 in the 2021 class. That doesn't actually sound all that impressive, but usually UNLV lands like one or two kids that are in the top 600 or so nationally. Arroyo, by the way, got three in the 2020 class. So Cam Blanton is a pretty highly ranked recruit for UNLV football. But the most important part, or the part that from the 2020 class that I like to point out a lot, is Cam Blanton plays cornerback. Arroyo's class was good for 2020, but the best part was he got talented defensive players. The two highest rated high school players in the 2020 class were defensive players. And now Cam Blanton is probably going to end up as one of the three best players in the 2021 class. He is also a defensive player. That is what UNLV has not had in forever. Is good defensive players. Well, they have about one a year, right? That's it. They never have more than two on a team, and Arroyo seems to be recruiting to change that. UNLV's had some decent recruiting classes in the past. It's just usually always been a handful of offensive players, right? It's very rarely do they bring in highly ranked defensive players. That's what Arroyo started to do, which is could actually be a reason to think this defense, probably not next season, but at some point in the next few years, could be better than the worst defense in the conference, which they've very rarely been over the last 10, 20, 30 in the history of the conference or school. I mean, have they ever had a good defense? I mean, we joke about it, but like, have they ever had a good defense?
I assume the Harvey Hyde years,
they had a good defense. Like they won a lot of games under Harvey Hyde for a couple of years. So I assume they had something of a good defense then.
It just doesn't seem like it's one of those things where it's just not synonymous with UNLV football. It
doesn't exist in the universe.
Like
on any timeline.
If they won games, it was because they scored 57 points and their opponents scored 54 and the clock ran out. Because otherwise, it would be in perpetuity, they score, we score.
Or you win a game in the 60s because Josh Allen threw a bunch of interceptions.
Yeah. Wyoming's athletic director will take a 10% pay cut.
This is through the end of the year, too, by the way, so not just like a temporary one through the summer. This is the first publicized instance that I've seen of an athletic director taking a pay cut right now. Iowa State also announced that their coaches are going to see pay reductions. It's going to save Iowa State up to $4 million this year. There was a survey done by a company called Lead One of college athletic directors, and 45% of them say they approve or agree with the idea of high-earning coaches taking pay cuts right now. So this is probably going to become a widespread part of college athletics where the football and basketball coaches are going to see pay reductions because that's probably the easiest, the quickest way you can save money because those are the guys making a lot of money. If you look at UNLV, Otzelberger and Arroyo are both over $1 million. Otzelberger, I think it's $1.2 million for next season. Arroyo's at $1.5 million. So if they both were to just go down to $1 million over the next 12 months, that would save UNLV roughly $700,000. I don't know how much money they're going to need to save or cut. A lot of it's going to depend on do we get sports back in August and September, but that would seem to be the most likely place to start if you're going to need to save, you know, close to $1 million, or even if it's just a few hundred thousand dollars, that's probably the easiest place to do it.
It is. I mean, it is weird that we are seeing some companies where the CEO or the head of the company is like, I will reduce my salary to zero for the rest of the year or for until this pandemic leaves. And then we have other people that are just like, and make sure you're using Amazon to get all your groceries. And it's like, huh, you don't seem as in on this as some other people.
On the athletic directors, so Wyoming's AD is taking a pay cut of 10%. The Mountain West athletic directors don't make a ton compared to the coaches. Like, I think the highest paid one is $400,000. I think that's Colorado State's AD. So, like, you're not making a ton compared to a lot of the coaches who are up over $500,000. A lot of them are up at $1 million or over that. So, like, Desiree Reed Francois, she's at 350, 375, I think, or something like that. So it's weird in college sports because the athletic director is the boss, but they make way less than most of their, or not most, but their highest profile employees. So, like, you bring up the CEOs, that you would say would be the athletic director, but taking their money is not nearly as big of a factor as taking the football and basketball coaches' money.
So, weirdly, in some ways, the NCAA structure actually has one thing sort of done correctly. The one who generates all the money gets paid the money.
Yeah. So there is one other point I want to make on this, because this is college sports and you have to find ways to make the athletes suffer. That survey of athletic directors, so it was 45% of them agreed about high-earning coaches taking pay cuts. 81% of the athletic directors surveyed felt that their schools would require their athletes to make financial sacrifices. So more than half of the ADs that thought, hey, let's take some money from our coaches that make over $1 million, double that number thought, well, our athletes are going to have to suck it up too.
They're children.
And they don't actually make money.
They're children. Like, what do you want? Like, how are they going to save money? They're 18 and can't get a job because you'll take away their scholarship.
Yes. And I assume that's what it is. They're just going to take, like, scholarships or whatever aid they're getting is what's going to go away. And somehow that's... is that going to save more money than...
I don't see how that saves any money.
Yeah, I don't either.
The dumbest thing I've ever heard. I really need my toddler to really suck it up during this time of pandemic. No more juice. Good God. Vance Jackson is transferring to Arkansas.
So, this is great because Vance Jackson is grad transferring, leaving New Mexico, and heading to play for Eric Musselman, who is still the transfer king. Spectacular work by Eric Musselman, who just, he's going to end up working, he's going to end up getting the Kansas job and just solely exist on transfers to Kansas. Like, never bring in, like, five-star recruits. I guess he got one to Nevada, but, like, it's always going to be transfers. It's the John Gruden method of quarterbacks, except it actually can work in college basketball sometimes. But Vance Jackson has averaged double figures the last 2 years for New Mexico, so he's decent and wasn't one of the ones in trouble. J.J. Caldwell is also transferring from New Mexico. He's the one that was essentially kicked off the team and off campus because there was a domestic violence case, and he was, like, suing the school because he was, like, this case hasn't been proven. Like, it's just somebody claimed it right now, and there's no proof of it, and you guys kicked me off campus. So he's also transferring.
To?
I don't know. And was it Carlton Bragg? He's leaving, too. I don't know if he's going somewhere else, though, because he's been to, like, seven schools.
It's so what? Is that, like, is he going to go play for Utah and be another 28-year-old who's going to be on their team? Did not deliver that joke well. The USL E-Cup Rocket League Edition will be broadcast on ESPN3.
ESPN is starving for content, so they took the USL up on their video game stream. The USL is having most of their teams compete in a big tournament with Rocket League, which is video game that's soccer with cars. This is our sports for now. Lights FC are competing in it. DJ Ocho's playing for Lights FC. They start on Friday, but you can see it on ESPN3. First games actually started yesterday, and I watched two of them, and I'm under the impression there's some people that have never played this game before that are in this tournament because a lot of the scores were like 14-0.
Yeah, so it's
DJ Ocho better win like 14-0 in his first games, or I'm going to be worried.
They brought in a ringer, and if he loses, it's going to be very embarrassing.
Yes, it will be very embarrassing. The other part of this Rocket League is the USL put out their power rankings before this started, and Lights FC were fourth in the power rankings. DJ Ocho might be a professional in this game. We're going to have him on tomorrow and figure out exactly how good he is at this, and then he's going to play at noon. So we're going to have him on tomorrow and figure out how good he is at this.
So if he does lose, technically we could be responsible because we messed with his head.
Is that what's going to happen?
I don't know.
Is that what Wijnaldum says? Is that the reason they didn't make the playoffs?
Actually, I thought we got credit for some of their wins.
We did. He did give us credit for them scoring like five goals in their next game after we were inside the net. By the way, somehow San Diego Loyal is number one in the power rankings. This is ridiculous.
I mean, maybe where was the game developed?
I don't like this team. Was it developed in San Diego?
I don't know, but if it was.
Why would that matter? Maybe. Canadians aren't good at basketball.
I meant more, maybe they have an intern on staff. It was like, yeah, I used to do that.
Cheaters. It's rigged for San Diego. Unbelievable. All right, coming up next, Ken Bulkey of SinBin.Vegas to talk about a sport that isn't here.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Before I hit both of you, put your pants back on and walk me through what the hell's been going on here.
Ken Bulkey from SinBin.Vegas joins us. Even though there's no hockey, there hasn't been hockey for a while, and we don't have hockey for a long time, we're still going to talk to a hockey blogger about hockey, mainly because I know I can count on you to find something to complain about, even with no hockey. Can you run us through your conspiracy theory on George McPhee having guys play through injuries to start the season?
I don't know if it's a conspiracy theory. I just think he made an excuse for a plan that worked, and I don't understand why he's making excuses when his plan worked perfectly. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me.
So, okay, we know of the plan as far as the offseason to get rid of Gusev, Colin Miller, guys like that, and then make up for it at the trade deadline, but what is the excuse we're talking about?
So he was on a podcast with Gary Lawless, and basically he was asked something along the lines of, what are you up to now? And he said what they're up to now is going over their blueprint, trying to find out where they went right and where they went wrong and their blueprint, which to me sounds like, well, you went pretty right. You were in first place. Everyone was effectively healthy. You're about to win your division. The division's terrible. You should win the Western Conference. And then he starts going on this whole long diatribe about how they had a horrible start and they had some guys injured in training and then they had some other guys injured. And then good thing we got Chandler Stephenson, because who knows where we would have been without Chandler Stephenson. And my question is, do they even know what their blueprint is? If their blueprint literally was laid out perfectly in front of them, they got to exactly where the blueprint was supposed to be, and they're still making excuses about injuries that happened that didn't affect them.
Well, maybe they're not as good as they wanted to be because they kind of sucked for half the year.
How good do you have to be? You're winning the division with 71 games gone. You made the deals you made at the deadline. You have a great goalie tandem. You got rid of the coach you apparently wanted to get rid of. Like, what went wrong in this blueprint other than coronavirus?
Yes, that's a big flaw here. So the part of it that jumped out as conspiracy theory to me was you sort of alluded to the fact that they might have set Gerard Gallant up to fail, though.
Correct. That absolutely happened.
So I guess that plus the hiring taking place when only one media member from Vegas could actually be there for the press conference. Like, it was perfect general managing.
If you wanted to fire a coach and cover it under an 8-game road trip with a bye in the middle, sure.
Right, but throw into this the idea that you're sort of suggesting they had injuries to start the year and that's why they weren't any good, but they had to play him because they had a blueprint. Like, if they set up Gerard Gallant to fail so they could fire him, like, it was perfectly executed by George McPhee.
So then why are we making excuses about a slow start?
I don't know. Why do you think, or what was his tone as far as making excuses? Like, did he seem lamented it?
I mean, no. I mean, yes. I would say yes. He sounded like they had a slow start, and it was like, we wish we didn't have this slow start. Well, like, you kind of set yourself up to have a slow start by destroying all your depth over the offseason, and then he's talking about the deal that they got to Chandler Stephenson. And yes, of course, we're going nuts over one answer in a 57-minute long interview, but I just don't understand why we're even bringing up a slow start. And then also, I couldn't even find the slow start. They were 6-3. Like, what's the slow start?
Well, they were better than that in the first year, so anything's a slow start now.
Well, they were way worse in the second year.
Yeah, terrible in the second year. That was a failed season. They should have fired Gallant then. That would have been way better.
You know what? Looking back, why didn't they fire him after the Game 7?
I don't know. They should have.
They should have.
I mean, it's a ridiculous failure. One of the biggest chokes in NHL history.
I'm not going there.
You can agree with that. You know that, right?
I'm not going there.
Even if you ignore the 5-minute major, they were up 3-1 in that series.
Yes, and had the 5-minute major not been called, they win the series, and they win the series, and then we're back to a blueprint. The blueprint of a 7-game series is win 4 games. They did that, and then some morons decided that they didn't want that to happen.
All right.
Yes, then that happened.
Well,
that was
after
the morons.
Also, if you just prevent that from happening, you might still win.
Sure, but if you prevent a call from happening, they don't lose the game. They're not giving up 3 goals to that team without being down a player for 5 minutes. Not going to happen. They didn't for 55 minutes.
So from the offseason to the trade deadline, like, when we talk about this blueprint, do you think that was the best possible position the Golden Knights could be in to win the Cup? Like, do you think that was a good blueprint, or would they have been better off doing something different?
Yeah. No, I like it. Looking back on it, I think it was great. I think the idea made sense. Obviously, you're not going to get every decision right. Like, clearly they should have traded Cody Eakin in the offseason as opposed to the deadline, because he didn't help the team in any way along the season. So you're not going to make every decision perfectly. So that's just impossible. But the idea was actually pretty good, which is, all right, let's get under the cap by gaining assets, and then let's see where this team is going to need help. Because going into the season, I don't think anybody was saying, well, they're going to have to get a super high-end backup goalie. I don't think a lot of people were saying that they need another guy who's a bad trash talker. I don't think that's what the expectation was. And then come deadline, that's what they decide they need to do. So they had a better idea of what they needed to supplement. And I think that's a pretty good plan. It's risky, and it ends up costing people jobs, but it worked.
Do you think the season gets finished?
No.
So I think that the question I've been sort of throwing out there for most sports leagues, but primarily the NHL and the NBA, is at some point they're probably going to have to weigh the idea, is having a championship this season more important than having a normal season next year, right? Or is it better off to just have a championship this year regardless of when it happens?
Well, the idea is, what can we get two championships in? Because all the money's in playoff series, so you want to play as many playoff games as physically possible. So they're going to eventually have to decide, are we going to be able to do playoffs, regular season playoffs, or are we just going to have to scrap one of the playoffs, and it's easier to scrap the current playoff than the next playoff? But there's also the argument that when you come out of this, everybody's going to be so in dire need for sports, you'd love to be playing the most important games of your season directly out of this, as opposed to playing October hockey, which no one really cares about.
Are you in favor of going straight into the playoffs if they're able to come back?
Yeah, the Golden Knights are in first place.
But like, if they come back, like, you wouldn't want to see a shortened, you know, end of the regular season or something to lead into the playoffs.
I mean, in a perfect world, I'd like to see all 11 games be played out and then play out the entire season. Golden Knights actually win the division, and let's do it that way. I don't think that's realistic. I think the best case scenario would be to play a few games. But if you're talking about playing three or four games, like, are you really going to bring the Kings and the Ducks and the Red Wings and all the bad teams and tell them you need to work out for a month, play three games that have absolutely no meaning to you, and in fact, if you win them, it hurts you, and then your season's over for another 2 months? Like, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. So I think there's the only option is going to be either straight to a 16-team playoff or expand it a little bit. And I'm not a huge fan of the expanded playoff thing either, because I think it sets up the best teams to fail.
It's hockey. The best teams are already set up to fail. It doesn't matter. When do we see the gold jerseys?
I would say they were probably on track for like August. And now who knows? Because who knows when they're going to be able to get them, and who knows where they were in the production line portion of it. So I don't think it's coming anytime soon, but I would guess before they play hockey for the next season. So whenever the next season begins, I think they'll have them before that.
2021.
Who knows when that is? Yeah.
Maybe 2022. And push it back a little bit more just to be safe. Is there a chance Foley's wrong again? Because we've already had Bill Foley tell us the jerseys are coming, and that was like a year ago.
I mean, basically what he said to Jesse in the interview yesterday was, we designed them. They're fully designed. They're coming. Like, yeah, they better be fully designed. They sold a picture of one to somebody at the gala.
Oh, somebody has a picture of one?
Yeah. Yeah, really? That was one of the things. So after you bid on like a night out with Nate Schmidt, and I don't know if I actually did that, but you bid on the gold pads that they then decided you weren't allowed to bid on. After all that happened, then they had a bid where it was buy a picture of the third jersey, and someone bought that picture.
Do you have any idea how much they paid for that?
I do not know how much they paid for it. However, I do know that they signed a lengthy document to make sure that they're not allowed to share it with me.
Just you two. There's a specific sin bin clause.
I wouldn't shock me if in that document my name is written in there. I don't know. I haven't seen the document. I'm assuming it's an NDA, but it wouldn't shock me. I've been told my name is in other documents.
If they share it with any other media member, they get fined. If they share it with sinbin.vegas, they're punished by death.
No, if they share it with any other media outlet, it'll be the first person to ever be blocked on Twitter by Sinbin.
All right, give me an explanation of what the hell the pause game is. Is it supposed to be fun or infuriating?
Infuriating if it's you.
That's just because I came in 50-something.
Yeah, you didn't do very well.
Yeah, I don't know. It's 30%.
I wanted to play some sort of trivia game that a lot of people can play, and anytime you play an actual trivia game, the same four nerds win every single trivia game.
Yeah, I would have been one of them.
That are the best. Yeah, the people that are the best at Googling the answers as quickly as possible. So normally what I do is I go into the locker room and I ask Brad Hunt, what's your favorite pizza restaurant in Vancouver? In which case, that's technically trivia, but you have no idea how to get the answer. Well, I'm not able to do that. So we did effectively a Family Feud style where we asked a whole bunch of fans questions, and then you have to guess how many fans said whatever I asked them.
And they're all liars.
It does seem that a lot of people are lying on the surveys, yes.
You're doing it again tonight, right?
That is correct.
What's the prize for tonight?
Tonight's prize is a fine Sinbin pack. It is a shirt, a hat, and a Steve Karp book.
Wow. Prizes are going downhill fast. What was last time? It was a Chandler Stevenson signed puck, right?
Yeah. Run out sometime.
Run out. All right. I've got a tweet for you, Ken. You got to let me know how you feel about this. For those that don't know, Ken is a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan. It's been a great offseason for him so far. But Mike Evans tweeted, Harry Potter is the greatest film franchise of all time.
Yeah, I know. I know. He's always been a Harry Potter guy. I've known this since they drafted him, and it's been one of the negatives, probably the only negative that has surrounded Mike Evans' career. Like, if you're going to say the books are great, fine. Like, I've never read the books. I don't do books. That's fine. Like, okay. But the movies, like, that first movie might be the biggest abomination in film history. Like, that movie is horrendous.
Have you watched all of them, or did you give up after one?
I've watched about seven or six. I've watched a lot of them because we were going
eight,
like last summer. Is there eight? Yeah, a couple of years ago we were going to the thing in Orlando, and so I watched a bunch of them because I wanted to like understand what was happening in the thing in Orlando, Universal. And God, those movies are horrendous. Oh my God, they're bad.
Whatever you do, don't let Harry Potter fans know that there are other books because that also infuriates them.
What is like the one that the previous ones, like those are the ones you're talking about?
No, I mean just War and Peace exists. You can't conceivably say that these books are the best books ever written. There are much better books. Try reading them.
Oh, yeah, I don't do books, so I wouldn't be able to follow. I guess I read Steve's book.
That's a glowing recommendation.
All right, last one for you, Ken.
Of the books I've read. I will say, this one had words.
Last question for you, Ken. Who's going to win Survivor?
We'd have to guess Ben, right?
No, I don't think he's got a chance.
Ooh.
Yeah, I would have to say Ben. The one person I would say will not win would be Yule.
Ah, he has not been eliminated yet. Yule is coming back to win it. Thanks, Ken.
See ya.
Jared, you look very confused.
I just didn't know we were going to talk about CBS television.
I'm in a Survivor pool to replace sports.
Oh,
I'm in a Survivor
pool.
Yes, yes. So Wednesday nights are sports now.
All right.
It's as close as we get.
I guess while we're hitting, you are aging in real time in front of me.
I am.
We need to get you an NCIS pool next.
Oh, can you do a pool with NCIS? Which one? Aren't there like six different ones?
Exactly. You got multiple teams. You could.
While I was watching, it wasn't last night, but while I was watching Survivor, they were promoting a crossover episode for two of their shows, and one of them was called FBI, and the other one was called FBI like Special Agent.
Yep.
So it's like if CSI did a crossover between CSI and CSI Miami.
Since JAG, which was a show in the mid-90s, CBS has basically gone, okay, what if we made this but with different out-of-work actors? Where's Scott Bakula?
Coming up next, UNLV beat Duke 30 years ago today.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff. Tyler Bischoff is...
better with numbers and stuff.
Technically Correct.
Math? You're giving me math?
On ESPN Las Vegas.
Thirty years ago today, UNLV beat Duke by 30 points in the NCAA tournament. We are going to watch that game tonight, 7 p.m. on Twitter, at Bischoff_Tyler. We'll tweet it out from ESPN Las Vegas, too. But we will watch that game as UNLV's best moment. The last time a mid-major won the national championship, too, was 30 years ago for UNLV. So come on by Twitter and Periscope tonight to watch that. But here's my question for you, Jared. Would you rather have the biggest blowout win in the national championship or Villanova's buzzer beater three to win in, what was that, 2016? To win the 2016 national title.
Biggest blowout.
You want biggest blowout?
Especially biggest blowout as a mid-major. Just like, you kept saying we couldn't do it. Okay, we got here. Keep keep coming. We'll keep blowing you out.
Well, they haven't done it since, so.
No, I meant just that year.
But I, so.
And most of the next year.
So I would take the biggest blowout over any other championship except a buzzer beater. Because, like, take the Villanova one. Like, that's the, if you're a Villanova fan, that's the greatest moment in the history of your life. Like, that's better than, like, your children being born. Like, a buzzer beater three to win the national title is unbelievable. The one problem with beating Duke by 30 points is, like, what's the moment from that game? Like, Larry Johnson had a cool pass. Like, there are lots of, like, good plays, and you beat the hell out of them. But, like, you don't have a moment. Like, the Villanova, the game-winning shot from Chris Jenkins is a moment. And that's the one thing you don't have. Now, just winning a close game, I'd much rather have the blowout. Because, like, when Duke beat Butler, when Gordon Hayward missed the shot from half court, Duke scored 1 point in the final minute of that game. It was on a free throw, right? The moment of that game, even though Duke won by two, right, and it's a close game and you won a close game, that's fun. The moment of that game is a missed shot from half court. I don't want that if I, like, if that's your only national championship, that's no fun, right? Like, oh, the biggest moment of it was they almost beat us from half court. I'd much rather have the 30-point blowout and say, look how much we beat you in. But if I can have a buzzer beater, oh, the Chris Jenkins shot for Villanova is unbelievable.
It's the theory that Super Bowls are bad whenever one team is just dominates the other. What we need is we need one team to get up like 28-3 and the other team to come roaring back and beat them or just barely lose or something like that. Yeah, that's what makes them entertaining.
I mean, in general, as just a fan, I will take a poorly played close game that comes down to the final play or final drive over a well-played game that ends as, you know, a 7-point margin, right? That doesn't, that, you know, is decided with kneel downs in football or free throws in basketball, right? Like, I, just as a fan, I will take the poorly played close game most of the time.
But that's the theory behind all NFL games. All NFL games are close because near the final minutes, it's just like, oh God, they're just running up the clock. The other team's chucking it.
Yeah. So I'll take the poorly played close games, but winning by 30 is pretty great. Like, the fact that you can still look back 30 years later and say, hey, UNLV scored the most points in title game history.
Wasn't close.
And won by the largest margin in title game history is pretty fantastic. So I'll take the buzzer beater, but then the absolute beatdown is great. Either one of those is an excellent way to win it. So we're doing that again tonight.
Do you have champagne?
7 p.m. Do I have champagne? I think I do have a bottle of champagne.
Okay. I need you to pop the top right when the timer runs out.
I mean, I watch these in my bedroom, so that's probably not an ideal place to pop open some champagne. I also don't know if I'm any good at popping open champagne. I've never done that before.
Did you just admit to listening to Tyler's show?